Good morning and welcome to the New Orleans Imperative, the radio program that focuses on public education in New Orleans. For those of you all that are listening to us for the first time, my name is Renard Sanders and I'm your host. And we're here every Monday morning to talk about public education and what it's like in New Orleans in this privatized landscape. As most of you all know, we have the most charters and the most the largest percentage of charters than any other city in the country. And just exactly how is that affecting the bottom line, which is the children? This particular month in October, we're going to be focusing on a very, very important election. And as many of you all know, that the presidential election is being held November the 6th. But also we have a big election about the future of this city, the future of our city economically, and just exactly how we're going to look tomorrow with the election of the candidates for school board. All of those seats are up for running, and this month we're going to dedicate this whole month to those candidates and just how important this election is, and also the myths around what is going on with Orleans Parish and what New Orleans Public Schools really has done. And we're also going to talk about what are some of the kinds of things we should be looking at in a candidate. With us this morning, we have the former president of the Orleans Parish School Board, Reverend Dr. Torrence Sanders. Good morning, Dr. Sanders.
Good morning. Good morning. Great to be here again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming. We certainly appreciate it. Now, you served on the school board pre and post Katrina and probably some of the most turbulent times. A very, very difficult time. And you have come on this program before and talked about governance and how important that is. But given the fact that for the last 4 years you have been, you know, sitting on the outside looking in, on the sidelines looking in, and with your experience inside, how would you describe the operations and the status of the public New Orleans Parish School Board, given the fact that the press seems to, number one, they've done two things with the Orleans Parish School Board. Either they've ignored any work that they've done, mm-hmm. or they always related to the board that was there previous Katrina, and they keep that bad baggage with them with this new board. But in my opinion, I don't think people really know exactly what this present board has been doing the last 4 years. Could you kind of give us your assessment?
Sure, sure. And, I mean, that's a great question, and I think you are exactly correct when you talk about how the quote-unquote mainstream media has, by and large, attempted to ignore the existing school board or only to pay attention to it on occasion. But what remains true is that, you know, from pre-Katrina to post-Katrina, the school board has continually met virtually every month. It still has the same authority given to it by the Constitution and in terms of its levying of taxes and you know, millages and all of those things that a school board is supposed to do, just like the other school boards around the state. And in terms of what they've done, you know, I have been away from it for about 4 years now, but definitely some of the things that started even when I left, one is with the schools plan, and schools are being constructed or in various stages of the planning and building and design phase. New Hines School, I know, recently was open. New 35 is coming down the pike. On the fiscal side, and we go there next, on the fiscal side, definitely the board has continued to have what's called unqualified audits, which means a good. You know, there's no higher thing than an unqualified opinion. When I first came on the board in 05, Superintendent Amato told us that we really couldn't even read the books, that there was, you know, no trustworthy records that we could look at. And so, of course, that changed throughout my tenure on the board. But the audits kind of say, not that everything is fine financially, but that at least the records are in order. And so that is a great thing with public accountability and transparency. And then academically, of course, and partially due to the fact that, you know, many schools were taken and the school system was left with more of the high-performing schools. But even with that, they still have shown some progress. And I think now Orleans Parish School Board is, I think, number two in the state academically in its ranking. So, you know, they have been doing a lot of work, and, you know, I give them credit for continuing some of the things that we started post-Katrina and continuing to make the system function. What was interesting, you know, a few months ago with the issue of the rolling forward of the millage, that many of the charter entities then, of course, wanted the school board to exactly do that, basically to increase taxes on the population so that our schools can receive more money, which would have been unheard of, you know, years ago, where you have many people from a diverse group from around the city saying, you know, let's increase taxes. And that happened. And, I mean, personally, I'm pretty happy that it happened because, I mean, we do need more money for the schools. However, at the same time, we have to realize that politically that only happened because other people were involved and also saw themselves as being a part of what was happening and going on. So I could go on, but those are some of the things.
So this impression that you get, you know, from the mainstream media, and I can't necessarily say this station or other publication, but from the mainstream media, this board has performed exceptionally well compared to other school districts in the state, and they certainly are performing much better than the baggage that has been put on them by previous boards of 10 and 12 years ago.
Well, I think that's true. I think, you know, we look at post-Katrina, there's definitely been a change in those areas that I mentioned. And it's unfortunate that because of politics, because of the desire to uplift the charter and charter only, that, you know, Orleans Parish School Board, even though it has charters, but it also runs traditional schools. And those schools have really just been neglected in terms of public attention.
Yes.
I mean, schools like Bethune, where they are doing remarkable things with kids, and it's a completely open admission, and yet they're treated as though they're invisible.
They're like they're non-existent. You know, I mean, you know, and I tell this to Darrell Kilbert, the recently retired superintendent. He was an invisible man. I mean, every superintendent in the history of Orleans Parish School Board, everybody knew their name and everything, but, you know, their work has gone unnoticed. But look, we have another first call, another former state education official, Ms. Luella Gibbons. We're going to take her. Good morning, Ms. Gibbons.
Good morning, Dr. Sanders, and good morning, Reverend Sanders.
Hello, hello, good morning.
It's the Sanders brothers. How are you both this morning?
We're fine.
I just was listening earlier to Gerard's show, and, of course, you know, I'm always here on Monday morning. I was so happy to hear that Reverend Sanders is on the air, because not only is he correct in saying that Superintendent Kilbert is an invisible man, but he was also an invisible man.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I've worked with three different boards in my tenure on BESSE, and I have to admit that the first board, you know, was the board that was most talked about, and it is still the board that is most talked about when you want to talk about negativity. The last two boards have had to deal with that image. And so it pains me to hear people talk about the school board is this and the school board is that, when this is the third set of board members and it is a completely different board than the first board that we had in, really, 2005.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. And I think, you know, Turin was in that group. And, you know, the, because 2005 was Katrina.
That's right.
We really started to get some really, really kind of good direction. I think the ship started to turn, you know, in terms of, you know, equity and excellence.
You know, I think one thing people don't realize is that Dr. Sanders was president of the board when Hurricane Katrina happened, and the members of the state board absolutely refused to work with him. And so, you know, when you want to start talking about images, we need to also talk about the negativity that came from the state level in terms of Orleans being crime-ridden and everybody from Orleans Parish was corrupt. And here's a minister of the cloth leading this board, and he's met with that kind of defaming conversation.
Yeah, he was a victim. He was part of the 47%. You want to tell us about being a victim?
And I definitely, it's good to hear from you, Luella, and definitely appreciate your comments. You know, I tried my best to represent the people who elected me, and, you know, my mother was a teacher, and I know what education has done for me in my life. And, you know, but I don't consider myself a victim by in any part. I mean, I have an education. You know, it's the kids who were being deprived of that equal access and of the equity that were really being victimized. And so, I mean, I take it all over again in terms of the attempts to mar me or whatever, because I knew what I was doing it for. But, you know, I was always well. It was just in terms of making sure that the people whose interests that we represented was there and being fought for.
Well, you know, Luella, you know, I think that Reverend Doctor, and we got to distinguish between the two doctors here because there is a difference. But anyway, Reverend Doctor Sanders, you know, I think he's being very, very humble. But I think one of the things that happened, and people may not remember this, you know, one of the most egregious contracts that we've had, and we've had many that we've talked about on this program, was the Alvarez and Marcel contract.
Absolutely.
And, you know, initially, Reverend Dr. Sanders refused to sign it because we were being forced into a very unfair situation. And he was criticized so much that the other board members threatened to sue him. And he held out until he got what he wanted, where if we're going to pay the bills, and that's basically what Cecil Peacock, the former state superintendent, was saying at that time, you know, you're going to take this financial manager. We've chosen him. You have no say-so. You pay the bills. And he reports directly to the state. I mean, and Turin stood his ground on that, you know. So I think he's being a little humble, and I think that's one of the things you were talking about.
Absolutely it is. We band together to make sure that people in New Orleans were aware of how much money was being spent with Alvarez and Marcel. And to tell you the truth, Dr. Sanders, we still don't know what the work product from Alvarez and Marcel was. But I know we're wandering far afield on your topic this morning, but I wanted to just chime in and tell people, be sure that you understand that the people who are currently running for school board who are incumbents are not the same people that were in office prior to 2004.
Yes, definitely so, definitely so. Well, Luella, thank you for calling. We know that you've gotten out of the public light, but thanks for staying involved. But thanks for staying involved. And, you know, the door is open. And, you know, I think that, you know, on behalf of the citizens of this community, you know, you are a great spokesman for this community. And we do need to hear from you every now and then. I know you got other things on your plate, but your voice is certainly needed and sorely missed. Just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you, Renaud. I really appreciate it. If you don't mind, I'd like to hold on for a minute until you get to one race in particular. I'd like to make some comments.
Well,
you want me to call back in?
Yeah, why don't you call back in?
I have
another caller.
Okay.
Why don't you call back in? Because I would like to hear your comments. Maybe about 30 minutes?
Yes.
20, 30 minutes? Okay.
All right, I'll be listening.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. We're going to take Coach Smith. Good morning, Coach Smith. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
My question for Mr. Sanders is about Act 35. Could you chime in on Act 35 and how it's affected the Orleans Parish schools? And second part of that question is, would you have any idea about the authors and who introduced that legislation?
Well, thanks for the question. My general feel about Act 35 is that, first, it was a very unjust in the way that it was done and how it was implemented. And what I mean by that, you may be familiar with the fact that, you know, prior to Act 35, statewide, the limit or the line for a school that was considered failing was a school performance score of 65. And in reality, that school had to be under that for a period of 4 years straight. And we had several schools that were in that condition when Katrina hit. However, what I-35 did was that it then raised, and only for Orleans Parish now, only for Orleans Parish, it raised that score up to the state average, which was at that time then around 87.2, which then facilitated about 90% of Orleans Parish schools being now being considered failing and then eligible for a takeover. If that same standard had been applied to Jefferson Parish, for example, at the time I did the numbers, and over 60% of Jefferson Parish schools would have been taken over under that standard. Similarly, for St. Bernard and Plaquemines Parish, almost half of their schools would have been taken over. So, but it was only applied to Orleans Parish. In terms of the impact of Act 35, of course, it set up the stage for this mass chartering that we have. And as we well know, with that, there's some good, but there's some bad. And there's a lot of bad with that. And the inequities that we have wanted to address historically have remained unaddressed. Issues with enrollment and admissions and special ed, and now with the transportation issues, transparency, all those issues still remain. Probably the best thing that happened to us as a result of Katrina, not necessarily Act 35, was the infusion of federal funds, especially those first 5 years, where because of those funds, schools were able to have the lower class sizes and extended school days and do other things. But now the issue remains sustainability, because a lot of that money is no longer available. And so we have to find a way to do what we need to do for our kids for the long term. So, I mean, we could talk for days about Act 35. In terms of who proposed it, at the time, I believe it was introduced in the Senate Ann Duplessis, who had carried the bill for Governor Blanco at the time. I'm not sure on the House side who was doing the work. But most New Orleans legislators voted against it. I said most. I don't believe it was all. I know, you know, that Senator Duplessis voted for it, but most of them did vote against it, seeing that it was not fair. And, of course, the other thing, that there was no plan attached to it. It just removed the schools, but there was no plan in there. So those are just a few things. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much. Really did. But, sorry, I just wanted to ask one more follow-up.
Sure, go ahead.
That. What do you think are some of the possible ways of dealing with Act 35? In the essence, I know they go back to legislation every year to try and deal with that, and they've been unsuccessful. But, and I've also heard board candidates talk about lawsuits that they have already in place to try and deal with Act 35. But on the citizen side, what type of action can be taken to either stop, repeal, or even rewrite Act 35 so we can take care of those provisions that you talk about, those issues of transportation and transparency and neighborhood schools, I think is really a big issue.
And Coach Schmidt, I need to take another call. I'm going to let him answer that, but I got to let you go. But I want to thank you for calling. You're a first-time caller. Good question. Please call back, okay?
Thank you.
Sure. And on that note, it's important to note first that since the passage of Act 35 in November of 05, it's been amended well over a dozen times, if not more. And so and a lot of that amendment was being done kind of really under the radar, where people even involved in education were not aware of all of the little changes that were being done, really to favor the state and against the local district. In terms of what you can do now, I think at least, you know, I'm happy that it seems that there's a growing consensus now where people are saying, hey, RSD was never meant to be permanent. Schools should come back. The issue is then how quickly and in what manner those schools should return back to the Orleans Parish School Board. And so right now, the issue is getting your voice heard around those issues. In fact, there's a group, an organization now called Open, that will be convening some community conversations related to that. The first one actually is October, this Saturday. I'm not sure it's at Mahalia Jackson from 10 to 1. But you can look up Open on the Internet, Orleans Public Education Network, and get more information about that.
Okay, thank you much. We're going to take Mike, and then we're going to move on to our next topic because we have some other things we want to talk about. Hey, Mike, welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Good morning. I wanted to speak. Previous caller sort of beat me to it about Act 35.
Mm-hmm.
First, we carried the water for Act 35 in the House of Representatives. Of course, was Ms. Karen Carter Peterson, whose husband happens to be over a charter board association. Part of the problem with this, what's going on with the charters and all, is this incestuous relationship that these legislatures legislators have with these associations, if nobody in their right mind would have thought that, you know, using an unfair standard that only applied to Orleans Parish would benefit a system where over 90% of the children being educated are African American. And now what's happened in turn is the high school I graduated from, Carver High School, when they had their own people in place who were going to try to form a charter association, just like the ones at John McDonough and L.B. Landry also, these people were pushed aside and told, like Patrick Dobard told the people at Carver, go talk to Collegiate Prep. Go talk to Collegiate Prep. Man, we talking to you. You're a black face, but you really don't have any power, or you're doing the bidding for Bobby Jindal and those types. And my point about this is this. Act 35 was the worst thing to happen to African Americans when it came to public education in the city of New Orleans. And it's left a legacy of dysfunction, kids getting on the bus at 6 o'clock in the morning, getting off at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening, and the schools still are performing at a very low level. That's a fact. Their own measures show that. So who's going to address this and when the truth is going to be brought to light? Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Very good question and comments.
Yeah, I agree.
I could have said it better myself. I mean, he needs to be sitting right here, you
That's
know?
That's right.
And, you know, Mike calls, and he, you know, he's always on point, and, you know, and I think he's absolutely right, you know. And I think you stated it, you know, Dr. Sanders, when you stated that, you know, Act 35 was basically discriminatory. It was unfair. And, you know, the sad thing about it, and, you know, beyond what Mike said, and what Mike said is right on point. Every, you know, and you mentioned earlier that all of the, we had infused into this school district an inordinate amount of money. So much so that maybe two to three years after Katrina, the recovery school district had enough money that that probably averaged between 18 and 22,000 people per child,
yes,
per student.
That's right.
Most other school districts are functioning at $10,000 per student. But all of those contracts were let in Baton Rouge. There was no discussion here about that. You know, and we talked about the Alvarez and Marcel contract, the transportation contract, the food service contract, the security contract, and all of those contracts were let, and still today. So, you know, in addition to the important issues that Mike mentioned, you know, they have taken away all of our governing power, and now we have these contractors, which some people call charters, and they're not real charters in the true sense, but we have these contractors now that the, you know, as Mike said, the recovery school district superintendent told the people that called, but you go talk to the contractor.
That's right.
You know, something is, you know, fundamentally wrong with that when we pay tax dollars and now we have to operate at the whims of a contractor who's accountable to nobody. I mean, you know, it's just.
It's really just, you know, when I ran for the school board, I thought I knew and believed in democracy. But after I ran and I hit the streets and I served on the board, I really, really believe in democracy.
Yeah.
And what Act 35 does and has done, and what this RSD experiment has done, is so rudely awakened us to what it really feels like to not have democracy, not have a voice, to not be included in the most major institution in the community that affects our future with our children.
Yeah.
And it's horrendous. And that's why, you know, this next election, upcoming election for the school board, amongst other things, is so important because we need to have people on their board who will continue in some cases or make sure that is their commitment to receive the schools and to work with the schools so that they can really have public inclusion and not just buy-in, but public direction and moving our schools forward.
You know, I think that, and as I mentioned to the listening audience earlier, Reverend Sanders, is that, you know, the month of October is dedicated to the Orleans Parish School Board, and that is such an important board, merely because they are going to be setting the path and direction for our future. And I wanted to get the myth out
relative to how terrible they're doing. And, you know, I think the realities are is that they've done a remarkable job and a wonderful job. And in many indicators, they are number one in the state in terms of performance, in terms of graduation cohorts, in terms of graduation special needs kids, and they have the best bond rating than any agency in the city of New Orleans. But one of the things that we have to fear, and it's not just a fear in New Orleans, but across the country, and we do have a victim here where there is a concerted effort to move in people into electoral positions or position of power just to privatize public education. So when we look at the Louisiana Department of Education, we find now that a number of those operatives run our state, and they basically have one mission and one mission only. Privatize it. Don't worry about regulation, transparent it. Don't worry about the community. Just privatize it. So there is a move across the country to do that. So not only we've seen that in Louisiana, but we've seen it in boards across the country. And, you know, Wake County, North Carolina is another example. Good functioning school district. And the Koch brothers came in and they wanted to take it over, you know, and they financed candidates. I sense that we have to be wary of that. That there may be candidates in this race that want to replicate the Recovery School District, because we do have some candidates in this race, and I don't want to mention any names, but I just want to talk about the movement. We do have some candidates in this race that have supported the, as Mike described, the failed Recovery School District movement, Recovery School District movement to no end, and has helped to create it. So do you feel as if we do have the same kind of a movement going on in New Orleans, and this is the last vestige of Democratic control and, you know, not giving it over to the private industry and to corporate America? Do you get a sense of that?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think, you know, again, the public needs to listen to what the candidates are saying very clearly, and what is really their position as it regards the future of charters in New Orleans. And even if it doesn't have to be completely against them, but how do you see their relationship to the community is critically important. And is it their role to tell the community what they should be doing, or how should those organizations and the people involved in them become more transparent, more open, and how should they really take direction from the community? But not only that, you know, follow the money. You know, and look at where the money's going and everything, because that speaks louder than a lot of people, than anything else. And so we encourage people to do that kind of homework. And, you know, with that, you look for a board member who has integrity, you know, and not just to avoid corruption, so to speak, but who's not willing to be bought and paid for.
Yeah.
You know, because some people can change their tune quickly, with money. And so, And with that, of course, the best way to know what a person will do is what they have done, you know, what has been their community involvement, who have they represented, who have they spoken for in the past, or have they been silent the whole time? And those things are critically important to look at, because then it's kind of like, you know, I tell, you know, two people, they date for 2 weeks and they want to get married, and then after the first month of marriage, it's like, I don't know that person. Like, well, you didn't know them when you got married, you know, so you got to make sure you evaluate people clearly on the front end before you buy what they're selling.
Oh, yeah. But definitely so. We got a couple of callers. Let's get them in right quick. We have Ms. Plummer. Good morning, Ms. Plummer. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Good morning. One of the quotes I like from Thurgood Marshall is when they were looking for the next Supreme Court justice and they were looking for a black person, and he said, just because they look like me don't mean they'll be like me. And I say that to say this, as Ninth Ward Mike usually says, do you know what legislators and state senators, or can you even say, that crafted, carried, and supported the legislation that said that the schools, the RSD and the charters, have a choice whether they want to go back to OPSB or not.
Well, I don't think that that was alleged. That was Paul Pastorek.
That was State Superintendent Paul Pastorek before he left. He crafted that plan, at least his name was on it, and then all that needed to be done to make that plan a reality was for the BSEE board in Baton Rouge then to approve that, which they did. So it didn't go through the legislature, because that was a provision of Act 35.
But do you thought they had backing of certain legislators and senators?
Well, you know, it wasn't outward, but you can't say that it wasn't there. And, you know, just to, because I kind of followed that. I think I went to one of those meetings. Actually, what happened, after 5 years of Act 35, which was in November 2005, it was supposed to sunset. And as Reverend Sanders has said, after they passed Act 35 in November 2005, they begin to add on amendments, probably between 23 and 36 amendments. One of those amendments that was quietly added on was that at the end of the 5 years, the superintendent could make a decision whether or not it was to go back. So it really negated which was originally passed in November 2005.
Okay. In order for that amendment to be added on to that, it had to be done by the legislative body.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
That's my question. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So who created that amendment, carried it, and supported it? Are you aware?
No, I'm not aware of that. I'm sorry.
Can you do that homework and let us know?
I'll tell you what, I'll see if we can find that out because it was a ton of amendments too. And I do have a list of those that I'm going to make a note of, and I'm going to put on my website so that you can follow. And I'll see if we can find out just exactly who voted for that particular amendment
and who supported it.
Yeah.
Who crafted it, carried it, and supported it, I think the people need to know.
Sure will, Ms. Plummer. Good question.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling again. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're going to take... Miss Elaine. Good morning, Miss Elaine.
Good morning. I just turned on to listen. And is this something that's going to be on the ballot? Because I don't know. I just turned on the radio. Is this something to do with the election for November? Is it an amendment or something that you all are speaking about?
No, what we're going to be speaking about in a little while is the actual school board election in terms of candidates who are running for the school board. But what we were speaking of just now was actually Act 35, which was the law passed in November of 2005 that facilitated the removal of schools from Orleans Parish. And we were just talking about at the end of the 5 years when it was supposed to kind of end, how it has kept going. And that was done through some legislative maneuvering at the state level such that in 2010, schools didn't go back, but there was a plan put forth by the state superintendent, Mr. Pastorek, to basically give charter schools the choice as to whether or not they wanted to go back once a school met a certain criteria. So that's what we were talking about. But in November, of course, along with the presidential election and other things on the ballot, there will be the school board elections for the next 4 years.
Okay, so... can you tell me what would it be? What would it be listed as candidates?
Yes.
It's going to be candidates from seven different districts. That'll be dependent on where you live. The candidates that if you're in District 2, you're going to have candidates on there too.
I'm in the East.
Okay, so you probably have a District 1, and you'll have two candidates on there, and they're going to be on this program on October the 22nd.
Okay.
And those candidates are Heidi Daniels, who's a former school board member, and the incumbent member, Mr. Ira Thomas. And they're going to be on this program on October 22nd. But their names will be on the ballot for you to vote on November 6th.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Very helpful.
Okay.
And we do have good school teachers.
Yo, yes, we do.
Okay.
All right, Miss Elaine. We got to take Sandra on line two here. Good morning. Hey, how you doing, Sandra? How you doing?
Just great.
Good.
I'm really happy to hear the intense interest on Act 35. And the reason it's so important for everybody to know is because of the election, coming up, which is a big election. And what is going along with this election, there's a very serious, strong voters voters drive that's being taken place. I think John Mack has one. The prison, they're doing a voters drive in the prison. So anyway, I'm saying that to say that the information about who authored Act 35 needs to be out there publicly, because people need to, I think the Orleans Parish voters are getting sophisticated about making their choices on who to vote for. So we need to know who authored that so we can not vote for them again. And, you know, because I think one big problem in the past, especially with the Orleans Parish School Board, is we did not get enough information from the board. We didn't know a lot of what was going on, you know, so I think that's changing. And I just want to mention tonight we're having the town hall meeting, and I wish I had the information as to exactly who were all the authors for Act 35, because we need to put that out there, let everybody make their choice, but at least they'll know who did what. You know,
yeah, we're gonna research that and get that back to you guys, you know, on this program, you know, hopefully over the next couple of weeks, and definitely post it, you know, as public information on our website.
Good. Well, okay. Can I publicly invite everyone?
Well,
for
you
the
go ahead, and I got your leaflet right here, so you're taking my job. But go ahead. Okay. I want you to do it because it's your thing. Go right quickly, please.
I'll let you give the specifics. I just want everybody to know that this is an informational meeting, and we are filing a legal charge for investigation on different issues. So come tonight. I'll be happy to see everybody. And thank you for letting me talk, Dr. Sanders.
Okay, and let me just mention this to you, and I'm going to finish announcing your program. But we just got an email from Ms. Luella Gibbons, the former BESSEE member, and in answer to your question and Ms. Plummer's question, she said that all of the amendments to Act 35 were pushed and supported by Karen Carter Peterson, J.P. Morrell, and Austin Baddow. And yeah, there may be some other people, but that's what she is saying now, okay? I am still going to, you know, look into that, but she just mentioned that because she heard that on the air. And in regards to the town hall meeting, I'm gonna put that out there right now. For those of you all that's on the air with us, is Sandra Yule, and she'll be hosting a town hall meeting, and is hosted, one of the hosts, by Conscious Concerned Citizens Controlling Community Changes, and it's at the St. Luke Episcopal Church tonight from 6 to 8 p.m., and it will talk about what's really going on in our community with regards to the Recovery School District, business contracts, voting, and it will have several speakers. It will be Carl Galman, Sandra Yule, Coach Frank Walter Urami, and Captain Black, and that's tonight at 6 p.m. at St. Luke Episcopal Church at 1222 North Thursday. And I understand it is being filmed by the Oprah Winfrey next week, and asking people to come for five to sign releases. I got you in, Sandra, okay?
Excellent. Let me just say this. The Oprah Winfrey Network is doing a six-hour documentary on John McDonough High School. So it's important that we get the real story out, because, you know, there's been a lot of lies that's being told, that we're so satisfied here in New Orleans about what has happened with our education system.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons we're having this. We want the real story out there.
Okay, that's tonight, 6 p.m., St. Luke Episcopal Church, 1222 North Durgin 1. Let's come on out tonight, folks. Thanks again, Sandra. And thanks for the work. Okay.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Very interesting.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of interest in the community and people
yeah.
wanting to do their
yeah.
research.
Yeah.
Thank Luella
yeah.
for helping us out
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
Okay. She was up there in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
So she
yeah.
should know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the other issue is that, you know, people need to start holding people accountable, you know. And I think you mentioned earlier that many people think that legislation, Act 35, initially was passed by all of the New Orleans legislators. I think there were 11 of them that did not vote up for it.
Yeah,
most of them African Americans that did not vote for it. But there have been other things that are that have been done to our school district with these amendments and other things that have happened. And, you know, we need to hold people accountable for those kids that are standing at bus stops on the corner, for those kids that are not being serviced in special needs, and particularly for the fact that it has disenfranchised this community.
from the educational process. Our vote no longer matters, and they're taking our money and doing what they want to do with our children. And so far, it's been a very, very poor job. And we have Sekou online for. Good morning, Sekou.
Good morning, Sanders.
Good morning.
Brothers, two hard fighting brothers. I've been watching y'all careers, man, and I appreciate y'all.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Her and Sister Sandra called up. Let me just say, I got 2 points I want to make.
Sure.
One announcement. I'm backing Sister Karen Harper-Rell, and she's a fighter. She's been a royal warrior. I call her a royal warrior for education, black public education in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And she's constantly working the best into our community. And we're asking people to, anybody in the listening audience want to participate in terms of volunteering some of their time. I'm going to give a number out, and they could get in touch with us. And we need some people to hit the streets and do some canvassing all this month until November 6th, right?
Okay, great.
And the number is 504. The phone number is 881-3342. 881-3342.
Okay.
And if you call that number, leave a message. We get in touch with you, and we need some canvassers. We got some people. We got a pretty good little campaign structure, but we need more help, and we looking forward to people getting in touch with us. And the last thing is, how come, here's the question, is this going to be out in cyberspace, Brother Atari, how come it seemed to me, since I got back home, how come everybody that, quote, some black public officials who voted for legislation, Act 35, that took the school from the black community in New Orleans, basically, and disenfranchised the black community, all went to Catholic schools or did not attend public schools. And I know, there are parents, all of them got background that speaks to Catholic education and so-called private education, yet they had no experience actually going, living, working, and going to school in a public education. But I know, Dr. Sanders, you went to
Clark.
You went to Clark.
Yeah,
I don't know what Clark. Where you went to?
Yeah. Well, Clark's from Brooklyn.
I went to public school.
When you went to PS 621.
So, I mean, you know, Carl Gallman, people like myself, a lot of people working the campaign, Karen Harper, went to these public schools, you know, and it looked like they kind of the powers that be is trying to put element over the black community in New Orleans, and they're coming from a Catholic background, Catholic school background. I'm gonna talk more about that in the future. I'm gonna let y'all.
All right. Thank you, Brother Sekou, and thanks for the good work you're doing in the community.
All right. Right on.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, and you know, Sekou brings up a very important point, and you know that point not only has resonated here, but you do find across the country that the people that are making decisions relative to what goes on with public education, kids don't go to those schools, and the kids are not subjected to those same kinds of conditions, right? None of those people that are making those decisions, from the State Department and even at the federal level, you know, and in New Orleans, and none of those their kids are not standing on those buses at those bus stops at 5:30 in the morning. Those kids are not being put in classrooms with, inexperienced teachers. And those kids, if they are, you know, are not subjected to the kinds of things that public school kids are. So I think that what Sekou says, it resonates, you know.
Well, it just goes again. I think I made the point earlier when we're looking for whomever we elect for whatever offices, not only the integrity, but what has been their history and record of involvement. Because that tells you what they really believe in, and do they know the people that they claim to represent.
Yeah.
And to know, you have to walk in the same shoes. You have to be in the same hoods.
Yeah.
You have to know the same language. And so that matters. It's not good enough to just vote for someone because they send you a nice brochure in the mail and because they can make a good commercial and because other people say vote for them.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do our own homework. And we have to expect that people who want to represent us already have been representing us.
And we also need to say that many of these folks are very well financed. So they're going to flood the city with signs and, you know, stuff like that. But we really need to look beyond that. and ask those kinds of questions.
That's right.
We're going to have you back on. We're going to take one more caller right quick, and then I want you to close up because I want to bring you back on at the end of the month. As I mentioned earlier, that we're dedicating, the New Orleans Imperative is dedicating this month to the Orleans Parish School Board candidates. So for the next 3 weeks, we're going to have on candidates from each district. Next week, we'll have on candidates from District 6 and 7, which is October the 8th. The following week, on October the 15th, we're going to have candidates from Districts 3 and 4. And on October the 22nd, we're going to have candidates from District 1 and 2. But also, we want to bring you back on, Reverend Sanders, you know, to kind of help help us talk about this elections. And not necessarily to say, well, we endorse this candidate or we endorse that candidate, but just to tell the public exactly what are the things that we need to be looking for. And that we, you know, we don't go for the okey-doke, so to speak. You know, and I think that that's important. And I think you spoke about that earlier. Could you reiterate that a little bit in terms of what people should be looking for?
Sure. You know, I mentioned integrity because, you know, with all of our elected officials, we need to know that they say what they mean and they mean what they say. They're not saying different things to different people all over the place. But the other thing is involvement. What has actually been their involvement? Have they been no-shows or have they been in the fight? And really, then what is their knowledge level? You know, I'm tired of seeing candidates, person who get up and don't know anything and are just parroting a few lines that somebody wrote down for them, but you can tell that they haven't studied. You can tell that they don't know it for themselves, and they just want a seat, but they haven't done the study. So we need to look at all those things just to kind of really and for this election coming up, you know, this board will choose a new superintendent, which is very important. This board will hopefully preside over some return of schools. And also, this new board has to speak with one voice in terms of any more legislation that comes from Baton Rouge, whether it's related to vouchers or all of the teacher evaluation and all the things that are hot right now that the governor will continue to push. This board needs to be the Orleans Parish voice to speak up and speak out against some of those things.
Nita online, and I think she may have a question for you before we move to our next guest. Good morning. Welcome to New Orleans Imperative.
Good morning to the Sanders. I was glad you all mentioned about the children are not going to the public schools where their parents is over the school board. I raised that question about maybe a year ago to Mr. John Wright, and he's white. I go, you're not right. he couldn't answer it. I say, you take a survey of all your teachers and find out how many of those teachers and the school board members have children going to public schools, but I never heard back from it.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think that, you know, what Sekou mentioned early, in addition to what you're talking about, the, you know, the folks that are making the decisions, you know, and not just here in New Orleans, but in Baton Rouge, you know, not just in Baton Rouge, but, you know, it's the Koch brothers, you know, who seem to want to take away voting rights, privatize public education. You know, they want to dictate the election. We have the Gates Foundation. You know, all of these big billionaires are trying to set policy. And, you know, they're not participating. You know, their kids are not, you know, don't get the wrath of this. So I think you're absolutely right. But thank you. Thank you again for calling.
And I said, I believe like that there's old saying, if we live together, and we're
going to
do things together, then we all
sheet
at the same table together.
There you go. Thank you, Ms. Nita. And, thank you for calling, and please call back. Reverend Sanders, we want to thank you for coming in. We're going to have you back in here. I think it's going to be about August the 29th.
All right.
October the 29th. Uh-huh. And, you know, we're going to be talking, I think it's the right before the election. I think, just exactly what we should be doing.
And I'll say lastly, thanks for having me again, but everyone, please vote and register to vote. The last day to register for the November election is next Tuesday. I think it's October 6th or the 9th. The 9th. So please, if you haven't registered, you still have about a week to go and register for the November election. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you much. And once again, we're going to bring in Ashana Bigard and also D'Amica Morgan, and they're going to be talking about what's going on with discipline and all those things to these activists from family and friends, and we're going to be talking with them in a minute. Also like to remind people that we will have the candidates on here by district beginning over the next three Mondays, and it's going to be beginning next Monday, October the 8th, October the 15th, and October the 22nd. I want to repeat, this will not be a debate. It will be just as candidates candidly talking about, you know, why they should be elected and who they are and why they're running. We will be able to take a few calls, but we will not have a debate. We don't have time for that, and I think much of that is wasted time. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
And welcome to the New Orleans Imperative again. And D'Amica and Ashana, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're here for and, you know, what's at stake here? You know, you guys have done a lot of work in this community, particularly around discipline and around push out and those things. And you all have an event coming up, correct?
We do. Okay. And thank you for having us on your show.
No problem.
This week is Dignities in Schools Campaign National Week Against National Week Against School Pushouts. So there will be many different groups, at least 50 organizations across the country, who will be putting on an event to bring awareness on to school pushouts, as well as look at solutions, so looking to the community to bring up to come up with solutions to this particular problem. Each year there are 3 million students who are suspended with out-of-school suspensions. And in Louisiana, there are at least 300,000 students who have disciplinary actions taken against them, which could result in out-of-school suspensions or expulsions or alternative educational sites. And so we want to bring awareness to this issue, not only the problem in Louisiana, but New Orleans, in particular on tomorrow. And Ashana will talk to you a little bit more about the event and what will take place.
Okay, Ashana.
Hi, thank you again for having us. So the event is, we're having a screening of our movie, School to Prison Pipeline, which talks about, again, the school pushouts and the reasons that children are being pushed out of school and what that leads to, because I think a lot of people have misconceptions when you talk about suspended children. They don't realize that, especially in New Orleans, due to the amount of districts we have and the different rules and discipline guides, that children can be pushed out of school, suspended up to 5 days for things as minor as chewing gum or using the restroom or having the wrong color socks or even a check on a white pair of white socks. They can be suspended, and it is really up to the individual school or school district what that looks like and how long that is. And a child can be suspended over and over again, repeat suspensions, in lieu of even the expulsion, because they have done something to kind of put the expulsion process together, which is all of the expelled children now in New Orleans, which is a great thing, go through one central location, which is through the RSD's Mr. Moore, the person who looks at all expulsions now, which is great. We're glad that that improvement happened. But the suspensions is still out of control. It's a problem, and we want the community, parents, young people to come together to come up with solutions that we can present for Bessie, the new school board, et cetera.
And that's going to be tomorrow night at the Ashley Center, October the 2nd at 6 to 8, and it is a documentary screening of the movie Stop the School to Prison Pipeline, What Will It Take, correct?
Yes, yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit deeper about this, because you guys have done a lot of work in this area, and it's been very, very important work. You guys were also part of a very, very critical study of the suspension rate in the recovery school district. And could you give us a little summary of what those numbers look like back in, I guess you all get that in 10 or 09?
Yeah, we released a report in 2010, but we were looking at the school data from the 2007-2008 school year. And back then, you know, while the expulsion rate, out-of-school suspension rate was at least four times the national average. Right now within the recovery school district, the out-of-school suspension rate, while the number of schools have decreased, the number of suspensions have decreased. However, the number of out-of-school suspensions are still extremely high, and they're two times higher than the state average rate of out-of-school suspensions. So there's still something that there's still a problem. The problem
now,
still exists.
Now, what about expulsions? Did you have some data on expulsions 10 times the national average? Is my numbers off or anything from your report that you did, D'Amica?
There was a high number of expulsions during that particular school year as well, which was right after post-Katrina. era. So, yeah, I can't specifically give the numbers now because I don't have – I'm looking at another set of numbers, the current numbers, you know, that are affecting kids today. But it was – the number of out-of-school suspensions was higher than the national average, four times higher than the national average.
You know, one of the things that I'm hearing about is in that in many of our schools that are now being chartered, the kids are put under some very, very, very strict, you know, rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't think the argument is that kids should not, you know, have discipline in those kinds
of
things.
No, not at all. No.
But, and, you know, as a former principal, you know, I guess everybody would say, well, I know all the times you put me out. You should, but anyway, I think that. But what I am hearing is that kids have to walk on a yellow line in high school. Kids have to walk down the hall on this yellow line, and they can't cross over on the other side till they get to another line. There was some students, some graduate students here from Harvard University last year. They visited some of the charter schools, and they said the kids cannot talk during lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the observations that they did in classrooms, there were either two things that were going on. Either they were beating the kids up on what they should be like, how they should answer, how to say yes, sir, and more or less molding the kids' personality. Mm-hmm. And or they were given some chance about how the kids want to go to college, and it was something that was rehearsed. You know, and I think that schools are places where, you know, kids need to understand how to, you know, how to act. And
mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of criticism that it has gone overboard. And I know some of you guys, I see Ashana shaking her head, you've witnessed that. Am I correct, Ashana?
Yeah, we've witnessed it. And we've had several conversations even with school CEOs and principals about the fact that if you have a college preparatory school but you're walking children to the bathroom, they have to walk on lines. Everything that they do is monitored, and you're holding their hand when they get to college. How are they then going to operate when it is a self, you know, it's a self-managed environment, but you have given them no tools for self-management. You haven't given it to them, so actually you're not preparing them for college, and then becomes the question, what are you preparing them for?
Yeah, and, you know, one kid stated that, you know, if you get accused of something and you say, well, I wasn't and didn't do it, you know, you get a longer suspension. You know, I mean, you know, a kid has no, you know. So I'm wondering, in your travels, do the kids have due process? I mean,
Well, they're supposed to have due process.
Uh-huh.
Whether or not due process happens all the time, that's the question. And in some cases, it does not, because there's a lack of oversight. And when you have a lot of different types of school entities, in the way they set up to have autonomy. You have a lot of people who don't necessarily always follow due process. And some kids, you know, may be expelled from school, and the parent will appeal to the board, and the board will uphold that expulsion. And then the parent is like, okay, maybe contact us 3 or 4 months later because they don't know what else to do, but they still want something to be done about the issue. And then you might have a situation where it's like, where it's too late because it's beyond that particular time frame to deal with it. So,
but don't we have a situation with a lot of kids? I mean, you know, once they get suspended in these, expelled in these charter schools, there's no recourse for those parents. I mean, they can't go to like all these parish schools because that contractor, that charter operator. So they just kind of, and so the parents live in fear because, you know, they can just put your child out at any time.
And it's my understanding that the next step, once you appeal to that particular board, that then if you want to continue to appeal, you would have to go to the civil courts. And I mean, like, who have money to actually go?
Yes, you know, my dear friend, and I know she doesn't mind me mentioning her name, she said, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, when her children were in school and they had a problem, she'd go to the principal, work it out, go to the school board, work it out. Now if you got a problem in a charter school, you got to go get an attorney. I mean, what the hell is going on? You know, it's just totally, totally ridiculous. But once again, could you kind of give us exactly location tomorrow, time, and everything?
Sure. The event, we will be announcing the new updated data with the recovery school districts in terms of suspensions and expulsions. We'll be screening our documentary, What Will It Take to Stop the School-to-Prison Pipeline. The event is Tuesday, October 2nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Alshea Culture Center, which is on Aretha Castle Hill.
And that's tomorrow night.
And ladies, I know you guys are going to be giving some information. After we get through with this election and other stuff, I want you guys to come back on air. I think that push out is very, very important. So we really need to talk about that. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, we'd also like to reannounce that tonight at St. Luke Episcopal Church at 6 p.m., there will be a town hall meeting talking about what is going on with the Recovery School District business contracts and voting. That's tonight, October the 1st. This program will be rebroadcast on the New Orleans Imperative.org. That's one word, the New Orleans Imperative.org. We'd like to thank our sponsors, the Gulf Coast funders, the Metro Disposal, Richards Disposal, the Wisdom Reception Center, and the Fallberg Improvements Association. As I mentioned earlier, we'll be back on next Monday, and we want to thank you all for listening, and we'll have candidates from District 6 and 7. Please stay tuned for Talk What You Know with Reverend Littleton and Reverend Donna R. Jones, and thank you for listening to New Orleans Imperative. Have a good week.